Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. It's Friday, the 20th of October 2017. I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
And I am Zipora Nyambura. And we're coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
In today's edition, how will Liberia's opposition realign itself?
It's kind of critical, but considering the top opposition political parties, taking first Charles Walker Brunskin would not necessarily throw his support behind anybody.
We are ready to counter any threat during elections, says President Kenyatta, as Kenyans mark Heroes Day celebrations.
My administration is ready to counter any threats to our national security during and after the elections.
Those stories and a lot more coming up shortly.
But first, let us hear what has been happening around the world.
I am Shay Meineke with DW News. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta held a mass rally in capital Nairobi on Friday, urging his fellow Kenyans amid daily and often violent demonstrations to go ahead and vote in the country's re-election on October 26. Kenyatta said the election must not divide the nation.
In what is called a permanent state of elections, our economy needs to move on, and we must rid this nation of that uncertainty. And it is indeed my appeal to every Kenyan, exercise your democratic right on the 26th of October.
The World Health Organization said on Friday that nearly 100 people have died from a plague outbreak in Madagascar, with the UN Health Agency adding that the number of suspected cases has reached more than 1,000. The UN warned that more cases of the infectious disease are expected, but that international health organizations have sent antibiotics and deployed medical teams to the East African country. The WHO says a global outbreak of the often fatal disease is considered unlikely. European Union leaders have met in Brussels on the second and final day of an EU summit, where German Chancellor Angela Merkel and other heads of state discuss security, North Korea, Iran, Turkey, and Britain leaving the EU. Discussing with British Prime Minister Theresa May, Merkel said Brexit negotiations have so far not made sufficient progress.
Great Britain has sent us clear signals, and as we see it, it's not sufficient to begin with stage two here and now, but the case is clearer than when we last met.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Togo's main opposition leader, Tikpi Achadam, has called on France and African leaders to intervene in the country's political and often violent power struggle, as hundreds of thousands of Togolese continue to protest against the so-called dynasty of the Ungasinbe family, who have ruled for over 50 years. The leader of the Pan-African National Party claims that more than a dozen people have died and several others wounded in capital Lomé and elsewhere since violent protests began in late August. They're calling for Faure Gnassingbé to step down. Uganda's main opposition leader has been charged with attempted murder after his supporters clashed with police over a bill attempting to remove the presidential age limit of 75. According to the country's current constitution, 73-year-old President Yoweri Museveni would not be eligible to preside at the end of his term in 2021. The opposition accuses him of trying to rule for life. The charge against Kizza Besigye carries a maximum sentence of life in prison or death. And now in sports, Bundesliga teams Mainz and Schalke face off against each other tonight at the Veltins Arena in Gelsenkirchen, Germany, where home team Schalke looks to climb the Bundesliga table with a win. Schalke have 13 points on the year. A win could pull them closer to Dortmund, who sit atop with 19. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Welcome back. I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
And I am Zipora Nyambura. We are live on Facebook. Leave us your comments and we will read them whenever we can.
Yes, indeed. We start in West Africa. A day after the release of Liberia's October election final result, discussions about who supports the two parties in the runoff is getting tighter as losing opposition parties are still tight-lipped on whether they will support football star George Weah or the ruling party vice president Joseph Boakai. Campaigns for the runoff election for the presidency was declared by the National Elections Commissions, with November 7th now set for the election between the main opposition party CDC and Unity Party in Liberia. Evelyn Kbade reports.
Since the announcement of the election results, the three leading opposition parties of Charles Bonskim, former rebel leader Prince Johnson, and the Coca-Cola former executive Alexander Cummings have become the most attractive to the camp of George Weah and Boakai, who are seeking their support. But the question of who would support the Congress for Democratic Change, CDC, or the Unity Party is still unknown. Ralph Jimmer, an independent analyst from the Liberia Media Center, says Bonskim's ideology and his reasoning does not in any way align with the CDC, he adds.
It's kind of critical, but considering the top opposition political parties, taking first Charles Walker Bronskin would not necessarily throw his support behind anybody. From my own analysis, being a very sophisticated person and the way he has conducted himself, to be a kind of person who would not support the ruling existence, but I cannot equally see him supporting the opposition CDC.
Chima continues his analysis saying, comments from the Alternative National Congress Party may likely go to the ruling establishment.
ANC Cummings is one person that I would think during the electioneering period, he ran a very clean campaign. He was focused on issues. He did not deal with individuals, but he has also been talking about the issue of change. Whether that change he's talking about could lead him to the Congress for Democratic Change is another thing.
Prince Johnson, leader of the Movement for Democratic Reconstruction, is a controversial figure, as Chairman explains.
When Prince Johnson came from Nigeria, he made a declaration. He threw a support to Joseph Boakai. Few days later, he somersaulted and said he would be a formidable candidate.
Elsewhere, after the results, here are reactions from Liberians after the release of the final result yesterday by the Elections Commission.
Joseph Boakai, so long Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is leaving power, let Boakai live too. Let him give our children change. He's old to become the president. If they say we should vote again, we will vote. This time round, it's for George Weah. Let them give him a chance and let's see what he can do too.
But this is an election where we are talking about runoff between a ruling party and an opposition. For the results, like our leader said, Alexander B. Cummings. So if we verify that the irregularities are substantial enough to take us to court to ask the NEC to nullify the result, then we will do that.
Opposition Liberty Party of Charles Bonskim is expected to officially submit their complaints to the Supreme Court of Liberia and at the same time threatening a peaceful protest to be staged on Monday in the capital. Alexander Cummings and all Liberian parties' standard bearer Benin USA that next move as they have joined Bonskim in his cry of fraud in the just ended elections.
That is Evelyn Pade in Liberia.
And Wanjiko, we did ask on social media, who do you think has chances to lead Liberia between George Weah and Joseph Boakai? And he asked, tell us why. Isaac wrote from Liberia and said, as a matter of fact, one cannot tell who stands a better chance here because it's obvious both candidates have huge numbers of supporters.
And Oye Bobo says, for ease of calling out the cracks point, experience and qualification versus heroic sentiment, for the sake of an Africa which gives office mandate solely on expertise and qualification rather than ordinary sentiments. I think here he's referring to just looking at the qualification of the person who's running. And Oscar Paolo says, it's hard to say. I can't guess.
Neither can I. So, Wanjiko, let me first take you to Kenya, because Kenyans today marked Mashujaa Day celebrations amidst tensions before next week's repeat presidential elections. President Uhuru Kenyatta led the national celebrations at Uhuru Park in Nairobi, while opposition leader Raila Odinga held a parallel celebration for his supporters in Kisumu and parts of Western Kenya. I talked to our correspondents on today's event. We start off with Andrew Wasike in Nairobi. I first wanted to know if there was any celebratory mood ahead of the polls.
There is tension. Uhuru Park always overflows with crowds of people. But this time round, you know, the few thousands, which I'm actually pointing out, they did come, but across Kenya, people are still very tense. And there was a section where Jubilee supporters actually were there. Maybe I will estimate around 700 to 800. You know, this also added to the number of people who came out. Kenyans are very, very afraid, especially because of the protests that opposition has threatened and the overall political temperature in Kenya.
So it's clear elections politics took center stage. The opposition has vowed to hold demos during the election day on Thursday. What did the president have to say in regard to this?
Kenyatta was there saying that, you know what, I'm not going to back down, and come next week on October 26, my name, I will personally go and vote, and I urge all Kenyans to come and vote.
We know that IEBC officials have been attacked in some opposition strongholds. What did the president have to say? Will the elections go on in such an atmosphere?
Actually, he said that he had supporters even in opposition strongholds. He said that police will be deployed in all those areas and urged voters to come out in large numbers to vote. And here actually is what President Kenyatta had to say in the celebrations in Nairobi.
My administration is ready to counter any threats to our national security during and after the elections. Those who wish to vote, our guarantee that there will be adequate security for you to carry out your democratic right and constitutional right to vote. Those who wish not to vote, I promise you that your rights not to vote shall equally be respected.
Opposition leader Raila Odinga held a parallel Mashujaa Day today in Kisumu and parts of Western Kenya. And joining us from Kisumu is John Marwa. Marwa, to start off, what was Raila's stand once again before the elections on Thursday?
He vowed again that there will be no election. Not that opposition will be boycotting, but there will be no election. And he complained about the force that is being used by the police, standing it out, calling it a police force instead of a police service. This is what the opposition leader Raila Odinga had to say.
We are telling Uhuru Kenyatta, you are not facing this innocent Kenya. If it is about the contest, you are facing Raila Amolo Odinga.
Yes. Tell him.
I wish that these bullets were aimed at me rather than at this innocent people. You are not making any sense by unleashing bullets against your own people.
That was Andrew Wasike and John Marwa giving us latest from Kenya.
And Zipporah, we go to Togo now, where the opposition leader has called on France's President Emmanuel Macron to step in and help find a solution to the increasingly violent power struggle there. And we ask, could France or the West end the political impasse in Togo? Well, Tisa Williams says, calling on France for what? The problem of French-speaking Africa is France. Africa Union should just act.
Romeo Ajay is asking, why should they do that? Can't he himself find any other means apart from the demonstration to help solve the problem? Why should the West come in to help solve your problem?
And Bertrand Ayong says, the citizens of Togo are the ones that are safe to save themselves from this dictator. France and the West can only come in to do a regime change and still put another dictator in power who will be feeding them. Remember, these are your responses from our social media, our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Yes, and we have one here from Chair Sylvina B, who says the need to consent and build a good platform with the help of the Western world in case it's needed.
And Etienne adds, France through Macron should step in before things get out of hand. What is even wrong with all these so-called colonial masters? Most of them seem to be quiet. Do they want these people to die before they step in? Very emotional comments coming in from our followers on Facebook.
There's one emotional one here, also from Kimi Sangwe, who says that's the problem African countries are facing. They're not able to solve their own problems. Neither France nor the West can bring a lasting solution to the ongoing crisis in Togo or any other troubled region in Africa.
And I also see Rogers from Zambia saying on our Facebook page, we support George Weah. Well, if you're listening to us, let us know where you're listening to us from, and we will definitely try and read all the comments that we can within the time.
Welcome back. You're listening to Africa Link with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And Wanjiko Mwaura, thanks for joining us. And remember, we are live on Facebook. The page is DW Africa.
Coming up in this half of Africa Link, we'll hear about how blogging has affected a young Ugandan.
I've been to around East Africa. So people from, you know, Kigali, people from Kenya use my blog so that they can, you know, connect with each other in one way or another.
And we are monitoring your comments. The page is DW Africa. So join us and share with your friends.
But before that, our series, which began yesterday on why there is still hunger in Africa. The start of 2017 came with a serious drought in several parts of Africa. Parts of Kenya, Somalia, South Sudan and Ethiopia were all badly affected. Uganda, on the other hand, has always been known as a breadbasket of Africa. With its favorable climate and soils, the country is generally seen as food secure. Uganda, however, faces challenges both from the high numbers of refugees it receives as well as through climatic conditions affecting communities in the poorer and drier parts of the country. Sela Oneko has more.
It's raining as we drive up to Arua in northwestern Uganda. What didn't come down in rainfall last year, when the weather phenomenon El Niño changed the usual weather patterns, is coming down now. This kind of rainfall is not unusual for Uganda's northwest, which borders with DRC and South Sudan. According to some climate experts, there might even be a bumper harvest. With its network of lakes and the White Nile as a water supply, the country is one of the few in the region that was not too heavily affected by last year's drought. However, it still has its challenges.
We see that Uganda has made improvements in the last 10 years in many parts, but we also still see that the rate of children that show signs of chronic malnutrition, so that they're chronically under, don't have enough food intake, are still very alarming.
That's Andrea Partberg of the German NGO Welthungerhilfe, which is one of the organizations that publishes the annual Global Hunger Index. According to her, Uganda's food problem is a regional one.
We see that we have different peaks in Karamoja and in the refugee settlements and lower figures in other parts of the country, but in the overall country, we still talk about a serious food and nutrition security situation.
Uganda's northern region is the country's poorest. The drier northeastern region of Karamoja is home to a largely pastoralist community. They depend on their livestock and generally produce just enough to feed themselves. The northwest is the region where most refugees from South Sudan arrive, but it is also one of the most underdeveloped regions in the country. For many years, it was plagued by an insurgency of Joseph Kony and his Lord's Resistance Army. Today, it has little infrastructure and a community of subsistence farmers.
I think it's not a matter of Uganda not being willing to support these people, but it is a matter of Uganda having so many different issues to deal with that it has reached its limits.
Uganda's limits were particularly tested in the last year, in which the conflict with South Sudan flared up again. The conflict drove over 1 million South Sudanese refugees into Uganda, bringing the overall number of refugees to 1.3 million. Unlike most countries in the world, Uganda has made it a practice to give each refugee family a piece of land to live on and cultivate. The aim is to make the refugees self-reliant. And although the policy is working, the sheer numbers of newcomers make it difficult to manage. Solomon Osakan is a government refugee officer in the northern district of Arua.
Previously, refugees that would come with the livestock would have land to graze their livestock. Now we don't have that land. The numbers are overwhelming.
Last year, Uganda partly received over 2,000 new refugees each day, so they reduced the plot size. This was, however, too little to really farm on and produce food. So when the numbers went down, they decided to distribute larger plots.
So in Bidibidi refugee settlement, we initially gave 30 by 30 meters for refugees to build the courtyard or to build their houses and toilets. That would be the homestead. However, we have now gone ahead and given 50 by 50 meters farmland.
With the heavy rains this year and the bigger plots, the hope is that more refugees will be able to feed themselves.
Sela Oneko with that report.
Blog report. In this week's blog report, we feature a young and upcoming blogger from Uganda. 26-year-old Edward Nimusima mainly writes travel stories, but a close look at his blog reveals that he actually writes about himself, about people, and about life. Jane Ayeko-Kumet met with him in Uganda. Take a listen.
I wanted a place or a platform to turn out my ideas without having an editor. And it's been quite a good ride. I tend to travel around a lot and I wanted a place to relay my travel escapades.
Well, Ugandans are not exactly much into traveling for different reasons. To hear that you're actually writing about travel is something that excites me. And I would like to know, what has been the response so far?
Actually, that's a good part. When you say Ugandans are not into traveling, so there should be someone to push them into traveling. So that was the purpose of putting out a blog where I can document my travel so that people can read through and be compelled or spark a thought. Well, I've never been to Western Uganda, I've never been to Northern Uganda, but since I've read this part, it sounds interesting. So it's along the journey, people have responded with positive remarks, I must say. And I'm not targeting Ugandans only. I've been to around East Africa. So people from, you know, Kigali, people from Kenya, use my blog so that they can, you know, connect with each other in one way or another.
More and more young people are getting into blogging. Is this becoming more competitive, or is it actually something that is opening up new avenues for you?
It is actually opening up new avenues for me, I must say, because through blogging, I've met different people. Different brands have, you know, stretched their hand and told me to push out different messages. And much as, of course, blogging in Uganda is picking up at, you know, snail pace, as opposed to, say, in Kenya or other neighboring countries, I must say the future is bright for us, because we've had different and very many young writers start up blogs across for the past like 6 years, which hasn't been the case. And the trend is actually exciting.
Where do you see yourself in the next 3 to 5 years and even beyond?
It is a young blog, I must say. And if I continuously turn out our work, I must see myself like 3 to 4 years. My intention is to have a blog or one-stop center for information across Africa.
Your blog is about traveling. Are you looking into prospects or partnership with the Ugandan authorities in the area of promoting tourism?
Yeah, sure. Because first of all, I've worked with different initiatives like koikoi.ug, where, you know, it's basically a platform where it pushes the Ugandan flag forward. So my main intention is to collaborate with, say, UTB or Ministry of Tourism or other bodies to at least raise the Ugandan flag in one way or another through blogging, through pictures, through, you know, visual communications on my blog.
That was Edward Nimusima speaking to DW's Jane Ayeko Kumet.
Wanjiko, from Uganda, I take you to Nigeria. The Nigerian government has said it's ready to name and shame those who looted the nation's treasury. President Muhammadu Buhari himself has expressed disappointment at state governors who have failed to pay civil servants for months, despite receiving money from the federal government for that purpose. And we did ask, will Nigerian president win the fight against corruption? I will read the first one here from Aboyami, who says, Nigeria, oh my Nigerians, when will we stop all these politics? If you want to name them, please go ahead. The one of Babachir, you know, act. That is Pinjin. I cannot read further.
And Bashir from Nigeria says, 100% supported, but I urge Nigeria's president to expose their looted amount and seize properties.
Isaac from Liberia says the Nigerian government is faced with numerous challenges and so many hindrances from friends and foes, especially the media.
And he continues that he believes the Nigerian government will get there in time. Public announcement and ridicule will be the best way to install fear in the minds of many vipers sucking Nigeria dry.
Chidi Asigwe commented and said, no. It's impossible. That is a mission to nowhere. Mr. President himself is a father of corruption, so it cannot work. So keep your comments coming. We see you're also active on DW Africa Facebook Live. But first, we bring you sports. It's that time for Sports Roundup again. Bundesliga fans are looking forward to a weekend of action. With me in the studio is Chuck Penfold, who will be giving us an in-depth look of what will be happening. All eyes are on the do-or-die match between Cologne and Werder Bremen. Why is the match so important for the two teams?
Well, it's quite simple. These are the two bottom teams in the league. They've both got off to absolutely terrible starts this season. So a lot of people are saying either coach Alexander Nuri of Werder Bremen or the coach of Cologne, Peter Stöger, could wind up out of a job after this weekend if they fail to win. So some people are almost saying it's almost certain, unless maybe they draw, that one of the guys is going to lose his job. An interesting sort of factor, which may not be a factor, is the fact that Werder Bremen let go their Peruvian international striker, Claudio Pizarro, after last season. And Cologne just picked him up a couple of weeks ago because they've had a terrible time scoring goals. They've had a lot of bad luck, but they haven't been able to score. They haven't been able to replace Anthony Modeste, who was the big goal scorer last season and who they sold to China. But a lot of other things have been going wrong for them. So everybody is looking at this game this weekend.
And now to England. A crisis has hit the English Football Association senior management over the handling of claims of racism by Nigerian-born Eni Aluko against Mark Sampson, who is the English women's football coach who was fired last month. Do you think the Football Association has done enough to handle this issue?
First of all, I've got to point you to an article on our website. Read that at dw.com because it is a very complicated issue entirely. It all started before the Women's Euro when this coach Sampson apparently said something like, don't invite your Nigerian relatives to the game at Wembley. Oh. And different things have come out sort of piecemeal. Now, there's been talk apparently the FA offered her hush money so that she wouldn't talk about the whole thing. It's come up before a House of Commons committee in London. Sampson, as you said, has been fired. He was actually fired for something completely different. It was something he did while working for a youth academy. I think it was at Bristol or Bristol City. So the FA really has made a hash of this whole thing. It really doesn't look good.
And from that, we go, of course, to another women's national team, but on a different issue. It's the Danish national women's team who have cancelled their match against Sweden tonight due to the pay dispute. What's the latest from all this?
This has been a trend in women's football over the past year or so. First, the Americans demanded equal pay to the men and then the American U.S. soccer. The players seemed surprised it got canceled, but the DBU said, we don't have any players to play the game. So now the Danish Football Association could be facing sanctions from FIFA. Nothing's happened yet, but we expect something to happen. They could be barred from the tournament. They could just face a monetary fine. There's a range of things they could face. The development today has been they've got a partial agreement between the women and the Football Association so that they will play in Croatia on Tuesday.
Chuck Penfold.
And we are still monitoring your comments. Samuel Ameachi says, commenting on one of the stories we just had, Nigerian government is corrupt. Buhari himself is corrupt. This is what he's writing on our Facebook page.
Privilege Musanyiri says, African politics is so sick, whoever created the animal called politics should think again. In Zimbabwe, if politics was food, we could be starving by now.
Now, still on politics, the Ugandan police have detained the four-time presidential candidate Kizza Besigye over allegations of attempted murder following a deadly confrontation between police and opposition supporters in a remote town. We asked you on social media, is Besigye's arrest justified? And Charles Ogole says, Dr. Kizza Besigye and all arrests of the opposition members in Uganda have never stood any legal grounds in any court here. This is what he writes.
And he adds that the arrests are done out of both greed and fear by Museveni to lose power, but the tide is slowly and surely turning against Museveni. And I'll go on with the next one from Kambengele Guy Dibe from South Africa, who says, I think the Western have to get a new perception of their system, which is very harsh, before it should be later, because the world is working on this.
And Vincent says he had a rally, police descended on the people with guns, spraying live bullets, which claimed one. Now Besigye to be arrested beats my understanding. How do you attack unarmed citizens with guns, he asks.
And he goes on to say, a gun's meant to protect citizens or to kill them. Police in Uganda is becoming custodian for violence.
And another story that we had from Nigeria, fighting corruption. Ihechi Kara says corruption is like a culture now in Nigeria. And that's all we've had time for today. My name is Wanjiku Mwaura.
And I am Zipora Nyambura. Have a lovely weekend.